Orr v. Holder. Mr. Block.
Good morning, Your Honors. Attorney Harold Block appearing on behalf of Samuel Awi, his wife, and two children. This case is one that originally involved an application for asylum by the principal alien Samuel back in 1999. The immigration judge denied the application for asylum. The BIA dismissed the appeal in 2002, and the petition for review was denied by the court in 2003. Since that time, Mr. Awi and his family were allowed by ICE and its predecessor, INS, to remain in the United States. Mr. Awi had a very significant documented health problem involving kidney transplants, multiple ones, as well as accompanying health issues that stem from that. And in 2008, the family was summoned into Milwaukee ICE offices and at that time indicated that they would have to make arrangements to depart from the United States. Subsequent to that, a motion to reopen was filed with the board, contending that there were changed circumstances, essentially involved in personal circumstances of the family members, and the allegation was made that these changed circumstances were in fact elevated to exceptional in nature in terms of the fact that Mr. Awi's health continued to deteriorate. The son, who now was an adult, had married a U.S. citizen. They had had a child. The youngest of the children had attained the age of majority, and that, in fact, an older daughter that had left in 2004 voluntarily had encountered issues relative to family members in Nigeria confronting and insisting that she be subjected to female genital mutilation, which is a custom that is practiced in Nigeria, particularly by members of this portion of the population, the Yoruba tribe. Subsequent to the initial motion to reopen that was filed emphasizing those things, an additional supplement was filed in June of 2008, which contained a very substantial psychological evaluation report by a licensed psychologist and psychoneurologist. And in that report, the conclusion of the professional was that Mr. Awi, even at that
doesn't
point...
Doesn't he have to show changed country conditions?
Well, that is one of the standards that is required, changed
so what country changes conditions. Have occurred in Nigeria?
Well, we're not contending that there are changed country conditions. What we are contending is that in addition to that...
Well, what do you mean in addition to that? If you're not contending it, what's the addition to it?
The addition to it is that...
So we're not talking about changed country conditions. Is that what you're saying?
We're not talking about changed country conditions. We are talking about the changed circumstances of the individuals that rise to the level, quite frankly, of exceptional circumstances. And, in addition, significant evidence that was presented to the board explaining the inability of the principal alien to properly present and enunciate the basis for all of his asylum assertions dating back to 1999. The analysis of the psychologist was that this gentleman suffered demonstrably high levels of post-traumatic stress syndrome, and that in fact those issues and that inability or that mental limitation, if you will, existed way back in 1999 also, but had over the course of time certainly not improved, as it typically does not. And in that respect, It is our position that the board, when they filed their, when they issued their decision, which essentially relied primarily on the fact that a motion had not been filed within 90 days of the final administrative order.
I understand. What is the statutory basis of your argument? I don't know.
The statutory basis for the argument is that the board ignored significant evidence that was presented to it in terms of demonstrating the fact that, number one, the principal alien, when he...
Where does this tie? You mentioned extraordinary circumstance. What is that? What in the immigration statute does that tie into? I mean, I understand changed country conditions, which you say isn't involved. So what is involved?
Well, under 8 U.S.C. 1158 A2 capital D, extraordinary circumstances that relate to an explanation for a delay in being able to properly present and propound a claim can indeed constitute that type of consideration that should be made. And in addition to that, that generally speaking, under 8 U.S.C. 1229A small e small 1, serious illnesses of an alien or the after effects of that.
So start with the, if he's incompetent to present an argument, you say that should be an extraordinary circumstance.
Well, if it can be documented professionally.
So the incompetency of the applicant is to be considered as a point in his favor of keeping him here.
Well, it depends on what the incompetence originates from.
Well, he's not, well, that does depend on what it originates from.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I just picked up on that now. If the incompetence is something that is, what are we to consider? What is the government to consider?
Well,
is an origin of the incompetence?
The origin of the incompetence is based upon the set of circumstances with which this gentleman was faced prior to the time that he departed from Nigeria the last time in 1995.
So he became incompetent because of something that occurred in the country from whence he came, then that should be considered as a point to keep him here.
I believe that's correct. And post-traumatic stress...
I just want to know.
Yes, post-traumatic stress is, of course, a condition that individuals can manifest and can develop from their mistreatment.
I'm not quarreling with the diagnosis. I'm
I understand.
Questioning whether or not the diagnosis itself would lead to a requirement that we give that consideration in deciding whether he should come in.
Well, I believe very strongly that the board was certainly under the requirement to consider that evidence. And the problem, as I see it in the decision that they've rendered, is they've given absolutely no indication whatsoever that they even looked at the reports and analysis of Dr. Steinpreis, nor, in fact, did they give any indication that they had considered other pertinent and meaningful information propounded by the expert witness, Professor Lloyd.
What does it have to do with the fact that his motion to reopen was untimely?
Well, because the untimeliness, in other words, adherence to the 90-day requirement can be excused by virtue of the fact that that can constitute a disability that doesn't allow him to...
So why concretely couldn't he apply within the 90 days? I don't understand.
He wasn't competent.
Because I don't know that we realized at the time that he actually had post-traumatic stress disorder. And that is something you can't simply allege. You certainly have to have some type of a professional analysis to make a credible assertion of that. I guess I would, if there are no other questions, I would reserve for...
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Block.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Leslie McKay for the respondent, Eric Holder. Your Honors, there are two issues before the Court in this case. Number one, do you have jurisdiction over the board's denial of the motion to reopen? And number two, if you do have jurisdiction, did the board abuse its discretion? On the jurisdictional issue, this
well, that's in the Supreme Court now, right?
The Krishna issue is at the Supreme Court. That's correct.
So, no need to discuss it.
No, I wasn't going to, Your Honor. But there's a separate jurisdictional issue that actually is involved in this case. Number one, to the extent that petitioners are asking for and citing to Section 208A2D of the Act, they're requesting the opportunity to file a successive asylum application. The first time that that statute was cited, that request was made, was in the reply brief to this court. It's nowhere in the motion to reopen. It's nowhere in the opening brief. It's not been exhausted. And even if it had been exhausted, it's been foreclosed by this court in its decision in Chen. So there's a jurisdictional bar there on the successive asylum claim. There's a separate jurisdictional bar to the extent that the petitioners were asking for sua sponte reopening by the board. And this court has very clearly held that it does not have jurisdiction to review those findings. They are entirely within the board's discretion. And after the Real ID Act, of course, the court would be able to consider whether petitioners have raised a constitutional or legal question, and they haven't. The court has identified a couple of ways that perhaps ignoring critical evidence or failing to exercise discretion entirely, that those might rise to legal issues that the court would be able to reach. There's no showing of that in this case. No showing that the board entirely failed to exercise its discretion in the sua sponte context. The board says it simply doesn't find the circumstances of this case warrant sua sponte reopening. The second piece of the puzzle is there are no standards governing sua sponte reopening. So it's impossible for petitioners to establish that the board failed to consider something material because there are no standards governing what is or is not material in the sua sponte context. And I think...
What about now this argument that he was unable to file a motion to reopen within 90 days?
Well, Your Honor, again, I think that either goes to this notion of successive asylum application under 208A2D, which has not been exhausted and was waived, or it goes to sua sponte reopening. There's no other way to get around the time bar other than showing changed country conditions, which they admit they're not trying to do, and they indeed have not done.
No other basis for extending the 90 days?
They didn't request equitable tolling. I'm not certain that this court has held that equitable tolling of the filing deadline is possible. Other circuits have said that, but they never made that request before the board, so that wasn't exhausted. They didn't really, when they filed the motion, they really presented it, or they attempted to present it, under the regular motions regs, 1003.2c. They talk about changed country conditions. They kind of give lip service to it, but then go on about these changed personal circumstances without asking for the board to either equitably toll the filing deadline or sua sponte reopen. And I think the board reasonably concluded that probably what they were asking for was sua sponte reopening, and it declined to exercise its discretion in that way. I think that's all I have, unless the court has any additional questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. McKay. Mr. Block, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Yeah. Anything further?
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, Your Honor, I believe that it is clear that in the decision that the board issued, they make absolutely no mention of the significant evidence presented to them in connection with the motion, and simply indicate that they are not going to open it sua sponte, and make no mention of it. And quite frankly, with the quality.
So you filed an untimely motion to reopen, is that correct?
Well, any motion that's filed more than 90 days after.
Did you give a reason for filing the untimely
motion? Reason was included in the motion in discussing the post-traumatic stress issues that were raised by the psychologist, Your Honor.
What did you say about the reason for missing the 90-day deadline? Did you give a reason for missing it?
I don't recall the exact verbiage, but I believe, Your Honor, that in the context of the presentation of that psychological report, we made it very clear that this gentleman was not in a position to effectively propound his case at the earlier time based upon the analysis that he suffered significantly from post-traumatic stress.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Block.
Thank you, Your Honor.